and welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host for this hour, Rhonda McBride. Over the weekend, the sound and the fury continued to grow over the killings in Atlanta and the anti-Asian attacks that have escalated since the pandemic began. We have a lot to unpack in today's program, and to help us do that, we start off with three women for whom this issue hits very close to home: Leslie Ishii, Jennifer Quinto, and Grace Jang. And as I introduce each of you, maybe you can sum up some of the emotions that you've experienced as of late and also tell us about your Asian heritage. And I'm going to begin with Leslie Ishii. She's artistic director for Perseverance Theater, but she's also launched some national efforts to bring culture and diversity to theater. So, Leslie, how have you been feeling as of late with all this turmoil?
Yes, thank you for having me on, Rhonda, especially during these times. It's so important for us to have voice. How am I saying? I was just telling our other guests that I've been grief-stricken off and on since last Tuesday, the Atlanta shootings. I've checked with family. I even hesitate to go to the grocery store, just feeling vulnerable. If I'm out and I'm alone trying to get errands done, I feel a little vulnerable. Yeah. I think it's natural after what's happened, because incidents keep happening all over the U.S., globally too.
So, Leslie, what is your heritage?
I am Japanese American, fourth generation, and I was born and raised in Seattle.
Okay, we're going to go next to Jennifer Quinto. She is an artist, an educator, and well-known for her local columns about racism. How have you been reacting to all of the events, Jennifer?
I think it has been just a kaleidoscope of emotions. In certain moments, I feel okay and at peace, but then at times very vulnerable and very kind of untrusting, because now it feels, with the response from the public, like who really is supportive and who really is someone that I can count on for support, and especially for protection and defense in times like these.
You know, many of us in this country are a mixture of races, and you have a very complicated heritage. Can you explain what that is?
Yes, and that's kind of something that I've been grappling with in this situation as well, because there are some people who would like to invalidate my ownership of being affected by this. But the truth is that in so many ways, it does impact me. I was born Athabascan. I was adopted by a family. I've been raised Filipino with a Norwegian and German mother. And it's been a long time to get to where I am, but I know that I can own that identity after I've learned about my culture and our traditions, and I understand it. But truthfully, for me, even without the name, even without being raised by my Filipino father, my identity, just my appearance, people make assumptions all the time. And sometimes, even if it's not my appearance, it's my name. The moment that they key in on a name, then it opens up different doors. So through the multiple different facets of my identity, this is something that does impact myself and people who are like me. So that's why I wanted to lend my voice to this.
Well, Jennifer, you are not alone. You know, we are increasingly a country of multicultural people. I want to go to Grace Jang. She is very well known in this state, a longtime television journalist. She later went to work for Governor Bill Walker, his press secretary, then communications director, later his deputy chief of staff, and most recently she handled communications for the Senate Energy Committee when Senator Lisa Murkowski was chair. So you've seen this racism in Washington, D.C., kind of where the heart of the debate is happening.
Thanks, Rhonda, and thanks to Leslie and Jennifer for doing this. This takes an incredible amount of courage. And I personally experienced, incidents on the street, in the grocery store. Certainly there is some rhetoric on the House and Senate floor, but you had asked what emotions I've been feeling, and I echo Leslie and Jennifer in that this is a form of grief and sorrow, frustration, rage, but also hope. And I know that that's a little weird, but I don't want to get ahead of you. We can unpack that, but what I am lifted up by is the number of people who actually get it. And I also am encouraged by the folks who are just earnestly wanting to understand what it's like to be of Asian descent and be an Asian American woman right now. And I'm grateful that you're having this conversation. I'm grateful for the people who are listening to this.
Well, we're very happy to have the three of you here, three different perspectives. Now, you are a Korean-American, correct?
Correct. I was born in Busan, South Korea. My father was from North Korea, what is now North Korea. I am a product of the Korean War.
Do you think that these incidents reawaken trauma for people who have had difficult past? Like, for example, Grace, didn't your family have a harrowing escape from North Korea at some point?
Yes, yes. And trauma is intergenerational, especially when it comes to war and colonialism. My father was 4 years old when he fled with his mother and father when the Korean War broke out, and they were separated from his three older sisters. And my grandmother passed away, never knowing what happened to her daughters and her grandchildren. And my father grew up in dire poverty, which was a stark contrast from the relative wealth he grew up in North Korea, crossing the 3 months long walking journey from the south to the north. He saw people dying. He saw people being killed. He saw people falling off of trains. He went for days, weeks without food. And that trauma gets stored in the body. And, you know, there are just some things you just can't, quote, get over. And I, in my 40s, am starting to understand just how much it took for my then 44-year-old grandmother. She was 44 when she was fleeing for her life with her youngest child. The perseverance, the resilience it took to start anew in the South and just completely separated from her three children. It reminds me when incidents like that Atlanta massacre, the 1992 riots after the Rodney King verdict in Los Angeles, the murder of Vincent Chin, this just outrageous increase in Asian American hate crimes throughout the country. It reminds us that we are very otherized, marginalized, viewed as foreigner, no matter how long we've been here, and no matter what our personal stories and personal family histories are, that, you know, we're just constantly having to start over and prove ourselves. I want to thank those who are supportive of us and allied with us, and I am grateful for the work that's being done to highlight our stories. I am devastated for the families who've lost loved ones.
This issue of trauma that we don't recognize, not knowing immigrants and people, that how much of a burden they might be carrying, and then to put this hatred on top of it has got to be re-traumatizing. Leslie, you've been carrying a lot of conversations across the country with Asian American students. What are you hearing?
Well, I was just on with students today across the country at a major university, and then I'm in connection organizing support for hundreds of Asian American Pacific Islander theater artists. And across the board, we're finding out how to come together because, you know, when someone has something traumatic happen, often in the community, you might, You might say, how are you? Are you okay? But interestingly, almost nobody asks if we're okay. So that's what how I could be of service, was to bring these artists together, give them support groups to talk about their experience. And we're finding out, you know, there's a report that almost are right about 3,800 reports of some kind of incident, abuse, assault, and now these 8 murders have been added to that number. We're finding out there's so many unreported. There's so many unreported. And I'm the board president of the Consortium of Asian American Theaters Artists, as well as being here at Perseverance as the artistic director. And tomorrow we'll have a campaign asking Asian Americans, Asians, Pacific Islanders, to hashtag and tell a bit of their story. If they've had anyone verbally abused, be accosted, and you haven't reported, because sometimes when we do report, we're not believed. Well, you're okay. You weren't, you know. So what does it take? Someone getting shot to have that count? Do you know what I mean? Or like a Vincent Chin murder, harkening all the way back. So I've just been hearing a lot of stories. We've been enduring this all our lives, being accosted. Well, where are you from? No, really, where are you from? And these are strangers that walk up to you in a store, you know, or on the street. So there's a lot of instances of, as you were referring to Grace, that we're perpetually stereotyped as the foreigner, and that we need to basically keep proving ourselves. And I think I shared with you when we had a little bit of a conversation, Rhonda, you know, this is not new. Back, I'm Japanese American. I've been learning my history through my elders and through my own study. Years before we were ever incarcerated in World War II concentration camps, we were surveilled. And I visited the Japanese American National Museum to learn more of my history. And my grandparents are there, actually, in part of the exhibit. So I wanted to go see, and my great-grandparents, actually. And in the case was a button that it was white in red letters that said, no Japs. Underneath was a picture of a rifle. And then around the edge, it says, open season. So the idea that we're targets, that that kind of racism was going on well before us, and even before that, the Black community, before that, Native Indigenous people. So this is a pattern in society, and it's what we call systemic racism. And I was telling you, too, that I read a book called Caste, C-A-S-T-E, by Isabella Wilkerson. And I urge everybody to read it, because she really takes case studies and breaks down all the various ways, the languaging, when we look at the Chinese flu, the Kung flu, when the president was asked, please say COVID-19 because it is offensive, and it perpetuates stereotypes. It perpetuates us not being seen fully human. And then others catch on because that's the person in the highest office setting an example. And that basically says it's okay, and that dehumanization continues. And this book breaks it down that throughout the history of our country since colonization, language and the way all the small ways, even like little razor cut here, a little microaggression there, it adds up to a system being in place of hierarchy and keeping people in that caste system at the lowest rung, being disrespected, and being actually just dehumanized, right? So that blends to it. And as I was telling you, it's like the embers of racism are always there. And then when you hear people miss or politicize the COVID-19 rhetoric, it just fans the flame. And I think then you combine that with someone who's not well and they have that conditioning, you have extreme behavior and we have people murdered. It's just so tragic. And then we have my own colleagues on the radio here saying how we're so afraid, we're vulnerable just to go out to grocery shop or take our children on a walk.
Have you experienced racism as of late?
This is Leslie again. Absolutely. I was in the grocery store a week and a half ago, and I was accosted. Yeah. Grace or Jennifer, do you have situations you want to speak to?
This is Grace. So, you know, walking my dog in Washington, D.C., my husband and I, my husband, who's white, was a little behind me, so it didn't look like we were together, I suppose. And so this man came up to me and said, that's a nice-looking dog. You better not take it to China. And by the way, I heard the Japanese mechanized the virus. And it just kind of rattled off, and I was stunned. My husband was stunned. And then that happened a few more times in terms of just kind of people coming up to me and saying something. It's this exhausting kind of paranoia and being hypervigilant. And it got to a point where my husband and I just only walked our dog at night. And incidentally, the only other people we saw at night were other Asian Americans. I got to a point where I didn't want to go into public places without my white husband. And even all weekend, as I was preparing to go on this program with Leslie, Jennifer, and Rhonda, I was reading all the different comments and articles and op-eds, and just, like you said, Rhonda, like re-traumatized and triggered and feeling such sorrow and frustration and rage and anger and not wanting to leave and calling my family members and frantically checking on them. And this crosses race, this crosses ethnicity, this crosses gender. And you know, what the Atlanta massacre shows us is that this myth of the model minority is exactly that. It's a myth. Because the women who are murdered are among the most marginalized in our society. And there was so much that was assumed onto their bodies. And there was so much assumed about where they worked and what kind of work that they did, even though the Atlanta mayor said that all of the businesses were above board and not in violation of anything. And the fact that it's being pegged as just an Asian story, or it's about sex, and just kind of like compartmentalizing different parts of people's identity, I think does a disservice to the victims and to the issue overall, because this is an American story.
We're just about out of time, and we have about a minute left, Jennifer, so we'll let you have the last word.
Thank you, and I appreciate the participation of everyone here. I'm so grateful to be a part of this. In terms of experiencing racism recently, to be honest, at least the last year has been incredibly emotionally taxing, if not traumatic altogether. The issues of Black Lives Matter and the heightened aggression kind of stirred up from this past administration. I have been really not feeling welcomed or safe going out in public for various reasons, and so because of COVID and the social distancing measures, I've actually taken quite a bit of comfort in staying out of the public areas. So that has basically been the one protection, because before COVID, for me, experiencing racism is a daily issue. It doesn't matter what hat it falls under, what identity it falls under. If it's not my Native identity, then it's me being perceived in any other different category, even just as a woman. And so the aggression and the hostility is very real for me every day.
Well, Jennifer, I hate to cut you off because this has been such a good discussion and we really could talk for hours about this and not do it justice. So I want to thank Leslie Ishii, Jennifer Quinto, and Grace Jang for their courage for talking about some very deeply personal issues. Thanks for joining us.